How's it going, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Talking Heads Review. In this episode, we're going to be talking about relationships, drama, betrayal, sex, and love. Andrew Huberman on the Lex Friedman podcast, episode 393. Let's get into it. Hello and welcome to the Talking Heads podcast. In this show, we take great snips from other shows, shine a bit of light, add a bit of context, and always add some humor. We are not affiliated with any of the shows mentioned in the podcast. However, if you are interested in the shows discussed, you can easily find them by going to the link in the podcast. And now, to the show.
And the real world is not an idea. It is not words. Reality is...
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode. Joined again with Adam, as always.
What's up, buddy?
So, yeah.
It's weird. I couldn't hear the intro. For whatever reason, it wasn't playing for me.
Oh.
So it was just silence. And it made me realize, wow, we must have a really long intro for this.
Did you hear it last week, though?
I usually can.
Huh.
I think that it's just some setting somewhere. It doesn't matter as long as it records.
I think it recorded. Yeah, it recorded. Anyways,
technical stuff.
That's okay.
Well, we should be clear. I'm in Maryville, Tennessee.
Yeah, we're doing these remote from now on because Adam moved away and made everyone here really sad. But anyways. Anyways, we're talking about Lex Friedman and Andrew Huberman. I guess this is their fourth podcast together.
Yeah, they're good friends. And it's Lex's birthday, too. So
yeah, it is his birthday.
What a legend.
I wonder how old he is now. He didn't really say.
I think he's 40.
Wow. Yeah, and Andrew Huberman's actually a lot younger than I thought he was, too.
He's 48.
Oh, yeah.
How old did you think he was?
I thought he was like the same age as Joe Rogan, like in his mid 50s or something like that, but I guess he's still I don't know if I would call 48 young, but he's not old yet.
I mean, these days it really is. You know, people are in way better health than they used to be, and
yeah, man, if you were 48 years old back like 200 years ago, you'd be like a god.
Yeah. Well, you'd be, I mean, I remember in the 80s I used to think that was just a kid, you know, like 5 or 6. I used to think 40 was like old as hell, but to be fair, the 40 year olds I knew back then were in way worse health in general, is what it seemed like. I mean people weren't as fat back then. A lot of fat people today, but you know, people smoked a lot, the food wasn't as good, nobody was really like working out that was older, so yeah, people just looked old, like worn out.
Yeah, I've watched videos of people back in high school, even back in like 2000, and they look so much older. They look like they're like in their 30s. I don't know what it is, but people are looking a lot younger nowadays. Can't tell you how many times like I'll go anywhere in public and I'll see like either a young kid or a young girl, and I'm like, I can't tell if you're like 15 or like 27. It's kind of scary sometimes. Got to be careful about that one.
Definitely do.
But
well,
anyways,
if you meet them in a bar, you can pretty much assume that at least 21.
I don't know, man. Nowadays, people got fake IDs all the time. I mean, people had fake IDs back in the day, but I don't know. It's not as much of a guarantee. But that is usually I feel like I'm not going to meet someone who's less than 18 in a bar.
That's true. That's true.
Anyways,
I
wanted to ask you a question. I guess
go
in fitting with the Huberman thing. Last time after the podcast, you showed me your new house and you have an ice bath. How has that been? Do you use it often or?
It's been good. I've actually only used it once so far.
Oh, really?
Like we were saying before the pod about getting routines down. I don't have like a morning setup routine for it yet. I've just got to figure out like when I use it, like what time positioned next to after my workouts. And the reason being is because it gets so hot here so quickly. Like, it's hot here in Tennessee right now.
Yeah.
It's very humid and very hot. So I kind of have to use it pretty early in the morning.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing. It's not as hot here, but I really only do it in the morning. That's like the first thing I'll do. I'll like get out of bed and I'll usually what I've been doing, because I have one of the like cheap like tub ones, same one that you have. It's not like one of those ones that does itself. You have to add ice or some sort of way to cool it. But I'll just go to the store and get like a 20-pound bag of crushed ice, and I'll put that in there in the morning, and then I'll wait like 10 minutes and then get into it. And it's actually pretty cold. It works pretty well.
Nice.
And I keep mine in the shade too. I keep my tub in the shade. We have a lot of trees in our backyard, so I'm able. It stays in the shade most of the day, and so it kind of keeps the water colder. But it's going to be easier to do that in the fall for sure, and the winter.
Yeah, I think part of it now is just it's not the best time to do it. So I've got a better chance of getting into a good routine, whether it's daily or whatever, when it cools down a bit. But as for the ice, what I came up with, so I have all those packs of ice that you'll put in little coolers, you know,
oh, yeah.
just to like keep things cold. So I bought an extra freezer for my garage. And half of it is a 24-pack of water, which is frozen.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's basically like a giant ice cube, plus a bunch of those packs.
That's pretty
smart. So I don't have to keep running and getting ice. Not that ice is expensive, and we have
it is kind of expensive.
Ice,
I don't know. I mean, it's $6 every day I do that. For a 20-pound bag is $6. And if you're doing that every day, that adds up. You know, that's like...
That is
people,
a good point.
I don't buy coffee, so I guess that's like kind of my replacement for that. But... it does add up, and I probably don't do it every day. I'll probably do it like 2 days on, 1 day off, or 3 days on, 1 day off. But that one, that has honestly been the most beneficial thing I've done for myself in a long time. I've just doing it early in the morning, like I did it today, and it's just awesome. Like I feel so much better after getting out of it, and it helps me focus so much. So for me, it's worth it. Like I haven't taken my ADHD medicine in like months now, just because I've been doing that, and you know, school's starting up again, so it's kind of getting a little bit struggling, getting a little bit harder. But I'm hoping I can just stick with that, and you know, exercise regularly, and then with like supplements and eating, won't have to go back to taking my medication.
So, that's awesome, dude.
Yeah, that's the
awesome
goal.
That you found a way around it. I mean, look, Huberman has talked about cold plunges in detail probably more than anyone else that I know, and I mean, when he talks about like the dopamine release and
yeah.
how long it lasts for, you're probably getting some sort of a stimulant effect from that, which
oh, no,
is
I definitely
probably
am.
Helping with your
I definitely
your
am yeah
ADHD,
and like I was
you know?
Saying we were talking about morning routines before the podcast, but like I was saying, the morning is so crucial for me. Like if I don't start off on a good morning, it like escalates throughout the day, and then I just like 4 or 3 comes around and I'm like, dang, I haven't really done much today. So for me, getting in the cold plunge first thing and then working out from there or immediately getting into something productive is really important for me, and that has been really helpful.
Yeah, it really is a game changer. I mean, listen, even if it did nothing for you, let's say it was slightly bad for your body, right? It like, let's say it could increase the chances of you getting a cold because, you know, you're stressing your immune system. The mental strength gains that you get from a cold plunge, just the fact that you have to sit in there, control your breathing, get in a sort of meditative state, and like, and become accustomed to that level of discomfort, it makes you mentally stronger for sure.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the upper limits of that are, whether that transfers into all areas of strength in your life, but I bet it's close.
It helps with stress a lot too. That's like one of
the
biggest things is like being able to get into the ice water, which like stresses your mind out a lot and your body. And then being able to calm yourself down, get your breathing under control, kind of find some clarity of mind in that stressful situation is really helpful as well. And that it's kind of a fun mental exercise.
For sure.
And I've kind of lent into that more. And it gets harder as you do it for longer. And if you make the water colder, I don't know what temperature the water's at when I do it. I think if I do the 20-pound ice method, which has been the most effective, I think it's around like 40-something, like 45 probably, which feels cold because it's hot outside, but I really don't think it's that cold. Like, I've been in colder water before.
I'd be surprised. 45 is pretty fucking cold.
Oh, no,
it is. I'd be surprised if it gets down that much.
Yeah.
You should get a thermometer. I want to get a thermometer.
We need to get one for our grill, too. We have a barbecue now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I got one. I got this one here down to only about like 63, which is really not cold at all.
Maybe I'm overestimating it. It's probably only like 50 something. I don't know.
Well, the hot springs is 55.
Is it? Okay.
That cold pool.
The hot springs?
And that's pretty cold.
Wouldn't
the
they
hot
be
springs
cold?
Cold pool.
Oh.
No, they have one cold pool though.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, and 55, I mean, that's a good 20 something degrees over freezing. So it doesn't have to be that cold to get the benefits, is my point. When I was doing it at like 60 something here, I stayed in for probably a good close to 10 minutes. You know, I just put extra time in it.
And yeah,
it's doing the same thing. I got the same feeling, the same buzz. And honestly, it was like a little bit easier. I'd prefer it to get colder, but
yeah, I think it's one of those things. Like, I listened to the Huberman episode about that in good detail because I was really curious about this. And he was saying, you know, as you get better at it, you start to develop more of those like brown fat cells and it becomes easier. And so you have to either add more time or go down in temperature eventually. But eventually, like, you got to find your sweet zone for each person. It's going to be different.
Oh, so he was saying that your body kind of adapts and you won't get the benefits as much because you're used to
it? Well, if you keep doing it, yeah, eventually your body kind of adapts and you get better at being in the cold. And so it doesn't become as much of a shock for you when you get into, like, 60-degree water if you're used to doing it at, like, 40-something, you know? You won't get as much out of it. Because the point is you want to, like, kind of shock your body but be able to, like, control yourself is what he was saying. Like, you want to be able to still...
Breathe.
Be able to control your breathing, yeah, and not actually go into shock and hypothermia.
Yeah, it's so interesting to see. I mean, especially in the podcast space, and really anyone, like even Chris Hemsworth just got a really dope cold plunge made by this company called Odin. So,
oh, yeah.
Of course, Odin, because he's Thor. It's the perfect, but it's an Australian company, and it's one of those really legit ones. They're like 10 grand, and it cools the water and gets super cold, but yeah, it's kind of fascinating how many people are getting into this. And even though it does have the air around it of being a bit of a, you know, an internet fad type thing, I think ultimately people are finding that it's super beneficial and it might be here to stay. And that's nice. You know, we're like getting into the realm now where we have a lot of these really effective cheat codes for staying healthy and... You know, doesn't add a lot of time. It's like, even if someone's like, well, I can't even afford one of those small ones and I don't know where I get the ice. It's like, you can run a fucking cold bath. Anyone can.
Yeah, or even just a cold shower.
Nothing but the cold water in the bathtub and sit in there. You probably wouldn't even need ice. It'd be cold as fuck.
Or even just, I don't know, most showers are pretty cold too. So if you don't have anything to start with, you can do that. For, you know, it's not the most effective way to do it, but it does work.
For sure.
It does work, depending on how cold your shower gets.
Yeah. And again, this comes to the importance of people like Huberman and the podcast that they do. He's just doing so many interesting segments where he goes into such great detail. And, you know, it's like he's just really trying to pull the best knowledge out for people. And it's such a great reference to have. That's why I love his show.
Yeah, him and as well as Lex. I think that they're a good duo together. But yeah, I agree. I love that Huberman is kind of branching out and not just doing psychology stuff. He's doing a lot of biology and just all kinds of health related things and things that, you know, I feel add value to people's lives, you know, regardless of what you're trying to work on. He's doing his due diligence as a researcher. And as an educator, and he's really bringing useful tools to people at a very low cost, which is kind of the whole idea of his show. And I think that that's super important and is needed more now than ever because, You know, I mean, we don't really learn about this kind of stuff from school. You take PE in middle school and you're like, wow, I just don't like running anymore. You know, but you're not actually learning anything about health, dude. It's a fucking joke.
Think how vital PE could be in school.
Oh, it's so important.
It could be done in such an important way. Like, in it, they could teach you about nutrition. They could teach you about the importance of building muscle and sustaining muscle through your life. And let's say you've got, you know, some nerds in there. You got some, like, overweight kids. You just got some clumsy, goofy people that are just never going to get into sports. So what you do is you could just be like, okay, well, remember too, people have different capabilities and capacities for like any sort of physical exertion, but find things you like, work within your means and what you're comfortable with, and kind of teach a narrative that like, hey, no matter what, you don't have to be the athlete, but everybody needs to move their body and understand why.
Yeah, and I think you also have to challenge yourself. I think that's such an important part of sports as a kid, not only the physical aspect of it and the teamwork aspect of it for a lot of sports, but I mean just challenging yourself every day in some new way, whether that's academically through school or if you're in band or I don't know, whatever it is, but like having some outlet where you're actually like improving on skills and challenging yourself and learning is so important, because I think kids don't really get a whole lot of that in school normally. So I think like a lot of these extracurricular activities are really important for kids.
100%. I mean, mostly how it goes is you get in there, it's some teacher that can't be bothered to be there at all. You all play dodgeball, and the cool kids that are strong and physically gifted just basically hammer the nerds and make them fucking hate it. And then it's like, no, I don't like exercise or sports or anything, because every time I do it, I just feel like a fool. It's just so poorly taught.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes me happy about, you know, more people getting outside. And I think a lot more people are being cognizant of physical health. I mean, there's so much news out there. I think everyone, regardless of what shape or size they're in, really knows that they should be at least healthy. Like, it's a good idea to be healthy. You know, and so I think, but the people who are actually getting into that, there's so many avenues and so many different ways you can do that. You can find all kinds of sports. Like, it always kind of makes me a little bit annoyed when someone who lifts a lot is like, oh, I don't need to do cardio at all, or like, I don't like cardio at all. It's like, you just have to find something that you enjoy, whether that's like paddle boarding or biking or running for some people, or, you know, there's so many ways to get your heart pumping. You know, fucking jump rope is great cardio, you know, or boxing or whatever it is, you know, fighting for a lot of people.
But it's an enjoyment factor, right?
You have to be into it, because otherwise it's just going to feel like shit. And you obviously, it's not going to be easy all the time.
And honestly, if you're not into any cardio, which is reasonable, if you just hate it, you don't even like the exhaustion part or like having to push yourself, maybe that's just even a struggle. Just get on one of those stationary bikes at the gym, put on a podcast, and be on the base level and just cycle slowly. But just do it for like 20 minutes, 40 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, just make it easy for you. It's like you can build up to be mentally stronger the way you'll be able to push yourself more. But really, even that's not even required. You can just do the base level.
If you just want to be healthy, yeah. Yeah, not
what's terrible
is
when people are doing nothing.
Yeah,
like, people can go through weeks, months, years, and decades of literally never even sweating.
Yeah, that's
crazy. Your body is just falling apart. And I don't care what anyone says. Your mind won't feel good either.
No. Yeah. I mean, that's the main reason why I enjoy working out. It's not as much for the physical health wise of it, but just how much better I feel mentally. I mean, that's mostly the reason why I exercise. You know, I'm not like a psychopath.
Talk a little bit. I have to go grab a drink. I'll still be able to hear you, but talk a little bit about your like experiences with working out, what it does for you, how it changes things in yourself, and also reflect on how it feels to be sedentary for periods of time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've basically been working out my entire life. I mean, I did all kinds of sports as a kid. I got really into rowing when I was in high school and middle school. That was kind of my thing. And then when I moved out to Montana for college, I got into biking a lot, and that's kind of been my thing. For those of you who listen to the show regularly know, I just finished riding my bike across the country. So, but even to just like all of those things that I want to do and like my regular physical goals as far as working out and getting stronger, most of that is just like forcing myself to work out because it's good for my mental health. You know, I've never left a workout, never finished a workout and then be like, damn, that was a waste of time. Or like, dang, I kind of regret doing that. Like somewhat if it's like stupid hard, but you know, there's always more of an abundance of, oh, I'm glad I did that. Or, you know, oh, I feel so much better now that I'm, you know, a sweaty mess from running a bunch or whatever it is, you know, even just stretching. I fucking hate stretching. I hate it so much.
Yeah, it sucks.
But I still try and force myself to do it because I know it's good for me. And I do feel better at the end of it. Like, I can't deny that. I do feel better. And I recover faster. And, yeah, I just, when I don't work out, I just get, like, if it's, like, more than 5 days and I haven't worked out, or I can really honestly notice it after 2 days, I just feel like shit. And I don't have that much motivation to do anything. And a lot of my other like habits just kind of fall apart, you know, like I don't read or I'll waste time on the internet or whatever it is, you know, I fall back into that like sedentary lifestyle, but working out brings me out of that. And, you know, it's such a good headspace for me. Like if I'm running or biking, you know, it gives me time to think about all the different aspects of my life and what I need to be doing. And it just helps a lot.
It's interesting that you say like you've never had a bad day when you like leave the gym. I mean, 99%+ of the time that's true for me. It's a rare occasion that I don't know whether I'm like in a funk or just my body kind of hurts, or depending on what the workout is, I have had it to where I'm like, man, I just really don't want to work out today. I go do it. I'm glad that I did it, but at the end of it, I'm just like, oh, I almost don't even know if I felt better. It's like those are kind of rare occasions where I think I just push myself too hard, you know.
Yeah.
And I probably need to get better at just making sure I don't do that. But recently I've been swimming, right?
Oh,
so
good.
My buddy here, Sean, another Sean, he did this program like, I don't know, like 10 years ago or something, a while ago, where he built up to swimming a mile straight. Which is a long way.
That's a long way. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like an okay swimmer. I wouldn't say a strong one. And I definitely didn't have very good form for like front crawl or like freestyle, I think they call that. You know, my breathing wasn't good. You know, there was just a lot that I needed to like learn from. But I've been doing it now like 2-3 weeks. And today we did a half a mile. Pretty comfortably.
Wow, that's a lot. How many laps is that?
32.
That's
a
lot.
64 is a mile, yeah.
On like an Olympic, like a 50 meter pool?
No, this is a 25.
Oh, okay. But that's still,
25.
You did 36?
32.
32, that's crazy.
Yeah, so I did it in groups of eight.
Oh, okay.
So I did 8 laps, took like 10 deep breaths, 8 more. 10 deep breaths, then I did 6 more, and the last 2 lengths we do like full out sprint.
Oh yeah,
to finish. And dude, I'm telling you,
swimming
it's like
is
very
hard.
Meditative
swimming
it's
is hard.
Hard
though.
Yeah, and it's just seems great. Like I'm really curious to see how my body feels, you know, after I built up to the mile, then I can do it comfortably.
Yeah.
I think that's like a really cool standard to be able to keep and just have that in my arsenal. Because dude, the first couple of times I went out there, I was like swallowing a bunch of water. I was breathing terribly. I was like barely kicking my legs right. It was like each length was a nightmare. I had no idea how bad I was at swimming.
Yeah, I've never been taught like technique on swimming before. I think I took lessons when I was a kid to like learn how to, I don't know, it was more like a hangout thing, but I've never been taught how to like properly lift your head to like get a breath of water or like how often you should breathe. I always feel like whenever I swim, I just like go like way too hard, and then I just get so gassed. But yeah. I need to work with somebody and like figure out what's like a good pace that's maintainable and stuff like that. But I love swimming. I'm a big fan of swimming. It's hard though. That's always the one sport where I go back to and I'm like instantly humbled, regardless of how good of shape I am. And I'm like, damn, that is serious, serious work.
Yeah, it's a lot of form, I would say. And when everyone, like most people will be like, yeah, I can swim. And you're like, yeah, you probably can like stay afloat and move around and breaststroke and probably do some freestyle. But like really being able to engage on multiple lengths and stay focused doing it without, like you're saying, gassing out and breathing properly, it takes some work to learn how to do it. There's quite a few elements in there.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my story on swimming. I like it. I'm into it.
What did you think about the part about Huberman talking about praying and that like little, did you catch that little clip that he was talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, I liked it. I like that he said you ultimately have to believe in something greater than yourself, or you know, he thinks
yeah,
that
he said
it leads to some kind of destructive behavior.
Yeah, he said if we don't believe in something bigger than ourselves, we're bound to self-destruct, which I love that quote.
I think it's great, and I think there's probably a lot of truth in there. You see that with so many people that kind of have like this cycle of somewhat self-destructive behavior. You know, they like do okay for a while, but then they just kind of back themselves into a corner and then fuck up, and then it repeats. And yeah, it often comes from a place where they don't love themselves. You know, they don't care for themselves, and sometimes it's hard to do if you're not existing for maybe like, I hate to say it, but like a greater good, you know?
Yeah. I think you just have to, I think the issue with people, especially powerful people, this happens where they think that they control everything and that they are the person that's orchestrating everything in their life. And it's like, there really is a lot more to it than that you don't even realize, you know, there's a lot going on behind the scenes that you have no idea about. But I think it is part of you is just like letting go of your own ego in a way to be like, hey, you know, I'm just part of this whole thing here. I'm not the man, you know, I'm just along for the journey. And I think having that attitude is really, really healthy for humans.
Oh, I agree. Definitely. I mean, it's hard to make good decisions all the time. And it's hard to take care of yourself, period. So if you see everything around you as like a bigger picture, is like almost an extension of you that you have to take care of, like your community, your friends, your family, then I think it just becomes, it's a bit of a cheat code to actually living a better life, because you see the importance in doing it, right? So instead of you just partying and doing drugs and having fun and, you know, hitting up a bunch of ladies, you're like, you know what? I think ultimately I'm not treating some of these people well or treating myself well, and it's not really representing me in a good way. Like the sooner you can start thinking like that, and it often takes some time and years and to get that kind of wisdom, I mean, you're just in a really good position.
Yeah. And I think, like I was saying, being able to kind of let go of things, you know, they were talking about when shit is not going well, you know, sometimes all you can do is just like sit back and laugh at everything, you know, because you have no idea how it's going to all turn out or what's going to happen next, or you know, there's just a lot of uncertainty in life, especially when things look dark, you know, and you're in the middle of a storm. But you have to, sometimes you just, all you can do is just sit back and laugh at everything, because you know, I think personally speaking, there's been a lot of times where I'm in the middle of something like that and I'm like, I have no idea how this is going to work out, but I ultimately in the back of my mind I know, like, yeah, this can be worse. You're still going to make it out of this. You know, everything's going to be fine in the long run. And so it's a little bit easier to do that. But the more uncertainty you have, the harder it becomes to be like, yeah, this is everything's going to be fine, you know?
Well, it's impossible to see it when you're in the moment. I'm not gonna say impossible. You could remind yourself of what you just said then, and even though you don't believe it or feel it, like, that helps. So that's almost like coming up with a mantra to just like remind yourself, like, hey, everything's gonna be okay. Just because you don't feel that it is, or you know, or you don't know how it is going to be, ultimately, take this moment for example, right now. You and I have individually been through a lot of things in our lives that were very difficult. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? They've all passed. They all figured out however they did. And now we're here. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know if like currently you're going through something that's difficult, but let's say that you and I right now are not. Other things will come, but they will pass as well. This whole idea of like, oh, it's the end of the world, you know, I just can't do it. This is impossible. It's going to pass.
Yeah.
It just kind of does, right? It doesn't mean you don't do anything for it, but all the worry that we put into things is not really helping us.
No, a lot of times, you know, you're examining what's going on, and in your brain, it seems like a bigger crisis than it actually is. And then when you start to think about it logically for a little bit, you know, you calm yourself down and you realize like, oh, what's it going to take for me to get out of this? You know, and you start piecing that together. You're like, oh, okay. And you can kind of see how it is, but it's just like, for whatever reason in our brains, I think this goes back to like our monkey sense, but like not knowing how things are going to work out is like very, very disruptive and stressful for our brains. And we always want to have that sense of control over things. And so I think, like for me especially, letting go of that and being like, you know, one thing I was going to say as well is having the confidence to be like, yeah, I've been through worse stuff in the past, or I've been through equally as hard stuff. We made it through that. We'll find a way to do it, you know. But in that moment, yeah, it gets so overwhelming and it becomes really hard to have that clarity to calm yourself down and then come up with a plan to work through it.
Oh, for sure. For sure. It's so difficult. So difficult. Well, I like that Huberman was talking about, you know, psychologists, for example, you know, and like being on the same track of like making good decisions and doing well. Like seeing a therapist is helpful. He sees one, he has for a while. You know, it obviously has benefited his life. He said he had some depression during his postdoc or something. And, you know, he also highlights that there are like plenty of psychologists, therapists, whatever out there that are just not that good.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he gives the example that it's not like surgery. You know, if half of your patients are dying, it's pretty clear that you suck at your job.
Yeah.
You know, however, with like therapists and psychologists, it's like you can probably have patients for a long time and, you know, they're coming to you and maybe they feel like things are getting better, but like you're not really doing that good of a job. Nobody's dying. So I guess they could if there was suicides, but that might be an indicator. But otherwise, if they're just living and continuing, there's like no real oversight committee to the work that you do once you've established.
Yeah, it's a bit more ambiguous. Yeah, it becomes a bit more ambiguous of like, are you helping this person or are you not? You know, and I think that a lot of you know, places, like I remember when I last time I went to therapy, which was at the beginning of the summer, I was seeing a therapist who was still in school, and so he was graduating or he was moving on to his next step. I don't know what it is, but I was seeing him for free because he was a student and it worked out great. But I knew eventually we would have to part ways. And at the end of it, we did like this big evaluation where he asked me about how he thought or how I thought he did as a therapist. And it was actually kind of useful. I don't know if they do that for clinical psychologists, like after you go out of school, but there was definitely that evaluation with him in school.
Yeah,
and I think that is something that, you know, places and people should start to do more of, because, you know, I mean,
it's an important job. And it's very a job that isn't getting, like, dude, if you fucking sweep the floors at a McDonald's, people are going to give you feedback. You're going to get feedback from your boss and other places. Feedback is very important. Therapists and psychologists don't often get a lot of feedback. They're just in there with their patient, and their patient keeps coming to them, and there's just kind of like nobody really watching overall. And other than, you know, how many people you have on your books and what your patient, yeah, I don't even want to say patient retention, because you don't really want retention either. Like, you want people to get better and move on. Like, yeah, that should be your goal, you know? Not to say that there aren't people that can benefit from just lifelong therapy. I'm sure there are, but you got to be careful that you're not kind of encouraging that in somebody. You want people to ultimately be independent.
Yeah, well, it's the same thing with like prescribing medications. You know, you're not supposed to prescribe someone something and have them use that forever. They're supposed to use that to build coping mechanisms that then help them get off of the medication, and then you don't have to rely on it anymore. I think it's the same
with
therapy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think oftentimes therapy can take a little bit longer, you know, depending on if there's like pent up stuff from the past that needs to be unpacked or whatever it is. But I think it is definitely true, though, that there are some people who are therapists who are either not good at their job or in general just not good people. You know, that definitely exists.
I certainly know some.
Yeah.
So do you, bro.
Yeah. I think it's just like any other relationship. You know, you have to make sure that it's a healthy one and that both people are kind of, you know, on the same page as far as what you're looking to get out of it and where you hope to be, you know, what you hope to work for.
Yeah, I would just say to any therapist or psychologist or whatever out there that could be listening or ever listen to this, like, try and get the most honest feedback you can and get it from somebody that will tell you the truth. Don't get it from people that are just gonna fucking, you know, they're always super nice and they're always just gonna say the nicest version. Like, try and have a friend that tells you it honestly and straight. Like, and maybe a friend that doesn't always say things you want to hear, because it doesn't mean that you have to believe them, take it on, but it's worth considering.
Yeah. You know?
But I don't know how to set that up. I mean, I'm going to be a therapist one day, and I definitely want those people around me that can tell me the hard truths. They can be like, dude, I'm sure you're good at your job, but you do X, Y, and Z in your private life, and I don't think that it's moral or appropriate for you to be giving advice to people on these subjects because, you know, you're a bit of a fuck up in this area.
Yeah, I feel like
I would want that.
Yeah, and I feel like if you are the type of therapist where you know your personal life is a complete opposite reflection of what you're preaching to other people, you know, trying to help them, and you know what you're doing in your own life is wrong, I think that there's a level of dishonesty in your own self that would be wary of, you know, I just being a friend or being a therapist. You know, like, if you're not willing to live by the things that you say, you know, that's a big problem. And I think, you know, before you try and help other people, you need to work on that yourself, kind of.
Well, 100%. And
You can't give somebody relationship advice when you're on your fourth divorce. You know, like, it's like, hey, man, I mean, maybe you could. You probably could. But it's still like, if you're in the middle of something that is not going well, you know, it's like the government should not give the people advice on how to be peaceful. You know, it's like, you guys are out here making wars all the fucking time. Like, who are you? Who are you? You know?
Yeah. Though they keep the peace with like law and order. So it's a weird one. But that's exactly the point you made is excellent. Like, let's say you're a serial dater, you know, you can't really hold down a solid relationship and you just like dating a lot of women, yet you're helping your clients figure out how to create a stronger relationship in their life with their significant other or girlfriend or whatever. It's like, it's just a bit disingenuous. It's like, yeah, what you're saying kind of makes sense, but you don't live it.
Yeah.
So
it's like, how do you know it works? How do you know it works if you're not willing to try it yourself, you know?
Exactly. And this is where it gets into the murky water with therapy, that frustrates me is it's like a lot of people know, and a lot of therapists know, that there are a bunch of not very good therapists, right? It's obvious. We know them as we go through school and then we get into the professional world. Yet if you ask any therapist, they are not one of those ones.
Yeah, well, of course.
Yeah, they're not going to say it, right? But because everyone knows there's so many, some of them have to be. So there almost needs to be like a checklist system that you can go through as an individual. And if you're honest with yourself, you're like, am I doing this? Am I doing this? Am I doing this? As soon as you do it, it would be very clear to you that you're like, oh shit, I'm one of the bad ones.
Yeah. Well, it's like 80% of drivers say that they're above average. You know, it's like mathematically, that doesn't make sense. That's impossible. Mm-hmm. You know, but people just have that confidence that what they're doing is great. One of the things that I thought, they talked a lot about relationships, primarily, you know, romantic ones, but also other ones. And they were talking about like covert versus overt contracts and kind of saying like sometimes people will be in a relationship, whatever kind of relationship it is, and they'll have this agreement with somebody, but then they'll also have these, you know, behind the back, there's these other things that they want to get out of it that they're not being honest about. And then there's like this, they hold stuff against you, and there's like this big level of like dishonesty between each people. And I think that that's really interesting. And I think a lot of people become really blind to that as they get more into, you know, an uncomfortable relationship. You know, I think the saddest thing is seeing somebody who's in a relationship who's miserable. You know, it's like that they won't leave. You know, it's like, you know, it's hurting you, you know, it's unhealthy, you know, it's not working out, but you're still subjecting yourself to that kind of treatment all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. That is difficult. And the problem is too, that I see and I've experienced myself, is it's hard to come back from it. So in a way, you've already planted a lot of seeds of bad behavior, and the other person has too. So to like, after 2-3 years of a pretty miserable relationship, to think, oh, I want to work on my relationship and try and change it. There are things you can do. At least you can take responsibility for your own behavior and try and cut that out. But so many of the bad habits have been established that it's so much easier to keep falling back in them, because it's almost like, you know, it's like walking a path so many times. You make a rut, and the rut can pull you in. And it's like, now it exists. So, you know, any advice, and I think of it this way, it's like, if you start a relationship with somebody, from day one, you have to be doing the good behaviors, like right yeah. away. If they can't match you, that's okay. And maybe that relationship isn't for you. But it's so much harder to like, just go into them without thinking about them. You know, your bad behaviors are like stress on them, and then they react and do the same thing. And now all of a sudden you want to fix it and try and bring cohesion. It's like, oh, good luck.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty hard.
Very difficult. Now, what's the deal? Is Lex, I don't think, is in a relationship. He's kind of like,
I don't think so, no.
Always been a bit like that. And where's Huberman at? He has a girlfriend?
I don't know. I don't know, honestly. I could
and
not
they both
tell
don't
you.
Have kids. I thought it was interesting that Lex at the end was like, you're going to be a great dad one day.
And, oh, yeah. And I thought for sure Huberman would have had kids by now. I thought he
You'd
I
think
he
so,
had
48.
Kids. Yeah.
But saying that, I mean, getting a fucking PhD is a long process.
Yeah.
You got to sacrifice a lot. Maybe you kind of put a lot of that on the back burner.
Yeah, I think so. I think one thing, you know, it kind of reminded me when you were talking about you know, people in relationships. But one of the things that I've learned recently that I think has been really hard thing to figure out, but so useful information, is you can't expect everyone else to put the same amount of work that you do into things, you know? And I'm so guilty of this flaw all the time, because I have like a certain work ethic, and, you know, I'm willing to work for what I want. And I mean, whether it's a relationship or a job, you know, it can often cause a lot of friction when you're expecting someone to put in the same amount that you are. You know, you just can't expect that from people. You would hope so. You would hope, you know, people that you're working with are as fired up as you are, but it's just, you know, unrealistic for you to expect people to put the same amount of work that you have put into it.
For sure. And in the same note, there's going to be lots of examples where you're not putting in that work for somebody else.
Yeah.
And maybe not even realizing, you know, often people think that they're working too much for too little. And that's just kind of across the board mentality. It's a tough one. And that's probably very true for a lot of relationships that aren't working well, is that each individual thinks they're doing more than they should. And, you know, not getting the praise they need for it, and it causes resentment.
Yeah.
And just over time, that just builds up, man.
Yeah. Well, anyways, I think we will end it there. Go check out the episode number 393, Andrew Huberman on Lex Friedman's podcast. And we will see you guys next week.
Later.